Welcome to Caffeine, Crime and Canines, a podcast brought to you by two girls who love their dogs, love coffee, but most importantly, love true crime.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. How are you?
I miss you.
I miss you too.
Oh, back into reality.
After spending, I know, what the heck, right? I was just thinking now, I was like, this time last week, we were at the wedding.
Yes. How crazy.
How wild. Oh. How are you going? How are you settling back into everyday life, Lookie?
Yeah, it's been all right.
Yeah?
Just, yeah, standard stuff.
Yeah, same
old. Yeah, what about you?
Yeah, I'm the same, to tell you the truth. I just made my way through the week. It always, you know when you've got a few days off, the week is always longer. It sounds so bizarre, but I swear I feel it so much more than a full week.
Yeah. And we have another short week this week.
Oh, my goodness, I know. How freaking exciting.
How good.
So good. But, yeah, what else? What else has been going on?
Not much, really.
Nothing?
It's been pretty boring, yeah.
Should we update the listeners on our trip?
Yes, you start.
Well, okay. Well, we had an absolute ball. I got Lockie to the gym. I was so excited. I actually got her down there. So, yeah, that was really fun. We did Lockie is an amazing driver. She drove like 4 hours and I had no, like, as in I did not give her any directions. She just did her thing. Yeah, we had an absolute ball.
Yeah, it was so much fun.
It was.
We actually should tell the listeners, we talked about while we
Something
were there.
Huge.
Yes. Huge, yes. We Pretty talked big. About potentially renaming the podcast. Because when we say Caffeine, Crime and Canines to people, people are like, what the hell
what
is that?
Heck?
Like, yeah, you have to explain it. So we just thought maybe this is the perfect time to rename. We have a few ideas, but we are definitely open to suggestions. It's not happening right now, but it probably will happen in the near future, I would say.
Yeah, I'm all for it now. Like, I feel like when we first started the pod and we were, like, just even throwing around ideas, in our minds we're like, we'll go to cafes with Olive and Victor and try coffee and, you know, we'll talk about it on the podcast. But obviously that was before – like, that was during sort of COVID when we had so much time. And now that everything's obviously opened up, I feel like life's just gotten in the way.
Yeah.
So we haven't really done that. So, yeah, we were talking about that our name maybe doesn't go with us, if that makes sense, with a pod. So we would love your ideas. Like, throw them at us because we might even do a vote. I think we're going to come up, Lockie, do you think, with a few and then we'll put it to a vote?
Yeah, so we've got a couple of ideas and then we'll obviously get some suggestions. And I think we might narrow it down to three and then we'll get everyone to vote and see what comes in.
Yeah, so if you have any ideas for us, we would love to hear them.
Yeah. I love the one that we talked about.
Yes, keep it as a surprise, but I
definitely a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I told Monkey about it and he's like, that is great. Like, even he was like, that's really good.
It's just so. Us. I feel like it's a bit more us. And obviously, like, we casually, like, we're not like, we do this as a hobby. We're in no way, like, professionals in any of the stuff we talk about. We're just two friends having a chat about crime. So,
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, me too. We also should talk about while we were away, the Bondi attack happened.
Oh.
So we obviously haven't had a chance to, I guess, like, talk about it, debrief about it, even really post about it because we were away. And, like, I think it was actually quite good that we were together when it unfolded because we were obviously reading things as they came out. And looking back now, there was so much misinformation. Like, the first thing we read and thought what was happening was that he was, like, an ex-partner of the woman that passed away with the baby. But I don't think that was the case at all.
No, I don't think so. And I saw it reported like multiple, like quite a few places. And it's just scary because in my, at the time when we were speaking about it, we're like, oh, it sounds horrible, but it did sort of make a bit more sense. But It obviously was complete misinformation.
Which
is scary.
And it was a completely random attack.
Yes. You know what's crazy, though? I was speaking to my auntie yesterday, and she was telling me that apparently he was looking for blonde women, like blonde females.
Oh, God.
So, and I saw this thing on TikTok, and it was about that this girl just randomly popped up, and she was saying how she was on her lunch break at work and that she was walking down. Have you seen her? I feel like everyone I've told, they're like, we've seen her pop up. It must be making the rounds, you know, but she was making her way back to work, and they had obviously locked the doors, and they were trying to open them up for her, and he was right behind her, and they made eye contact, and she goes, for some reason, he just kept walking. She's like, I can't tell you why, but he literally, we made eye contact, and he was, I don't even know how far away she said, but she said he was very close to her, and she was locked out of her store, and he just kept walking. How effing scary.
Oh my God. I know. So scary. Even I went to the shops on Friday with Elsie in the pram, and like I feel like I was already on edge. Like I'd see, like I saw like a guy, he was by himself and he had a backpack, and I was like I started to think about it. I was like, people could do like copycat attacks now, like,
yeah, that's what
it's actually just crazy. Yeah.
Isn't it? Oh, my goodness. And you know what, though? Like, which is probably a good thing, but while we were away, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, oh, my gosh, how am I going to feel when I go back to the shops? Like, because I go shopping all the time by myself. Like, yeah. I'm always just, like, you know what I mean, scooting in and out shopping centres. And I actually went on my break while I was at work, like, in the city, and thank goodness I must have been distracted. I didn't think about it till I got back into the office, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, I did that by myself. Yeah. I thought the first time would be, like, a thing, but it wasn't, like, which, yeah, I guess for me it's a good thing. But, yeah, absolutely horrible.
Horrible.
Also, while we were away, Lockie, that little effing jerk passed away.
Oh, yes. He did pass away.
Yeah, which was pretty big news. And did you see how he made his family sign a, what is it? A
like an NDA thing? Or?
Yeah. So I wonder.
And what are they not allowed to talk about?
Yeah, like, exactly.
What actually happened?
Yeah, well, who knows? I mean, there's a few rumors that maybe he did a bit of a confession. Crazy though, right? That it's known now that his family signed one. So he obviously said something, because why the F would he make them sign that?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Isn't it? I feel like it tells a lot.
Yeah. I also just wanted to share something with you, because I feel like you'll find this quieter. Funny / creepy. So I was checking my emails yesterday, and there was an email in my junk folder, and I'm going to read it to you, because it's one of
personal?
Oh, I wouldn't say it's personal, but like it's like
a personal email though.
Yeah, my personal email.
Yeah.
And like it's just like one of those scam ones, but I just want to read it to you because I think people would obviously succumb to this. So it says, "Hello, my perverted friend." No, I'll keep going. "We've actually known each other for a while. At least I know you. You can call me Big Brother or the All-Seeing Eye. I'm a hacker who a few months ago gained access to your device, including your browser history and webcam. I recorded some videos of you jerking off to highly controversial adult videos. I doubt you'd want your family, co-workers, and your entire..." And then they've put my email and they've put my password. "Contact list, see footage of you pleasuring yourself, especially considering how kinky your favorite genres are. I will also publish these videos on porn sites. They will go viral and it will be physically impossible to remove them from the internet. How did I do this? Because of your disregard for internet security. I easily managed to install a Trojan on your hard disk. Thanks to this, I was able to access all the data on your device and control it remotely. By infecting one device, I was able to gain access to all other devices." And then he's like, "Transfer $1,250 to my Bitcoin wallet." And then he writes, "As soon as I receive confirmation of the payment, I will delete all the videos that compromise you, remove the virus from all your devices, and you will never hear from me again."
Are you kidding? Wait, look, is it your actual password that he had?
Well, I use I have multiple passwords, but he's definitely put in a password that I've used for some things.
Wow.
Yeah. But then he's written your password for this email, which that's not the correct password for that email. It's a password probably for something random.
Oh, so he's obviously hacked something else and then just hoped that it's the same password.
Yeah. Yeah.
What the fudge? That is wild. I'm dying. I know, and
normally I would just like scroll on with those things, but because it said, "Hello, my perverted friend" at the start, I was like, what is this?
Oh my gosh, that is so funny.
It is so funny, hey. But imagine if people would be like, oh my god.
Like, yeah, I reckon. Well, imagine if it was your actual password. But then, I don't know. It's just so, it's creepy as. I keep seeing these freaking internet security ads as well. Like, people can, your data is being sold on the deep dark web. You know those ads? And I have thought about it twice, but I just feel like, I don't know, I've sort of got nothing to hide. Well, although all the research for the podcast probably looks a bit fishy, but.
Another thing I wanted to quickly share with you before we get into this week's case is a show recommendation. A monkey actually got me onto this one and he's rewatching it. He watched it while I was away last week and he's like, this is so good. You'll love it. I'm going to rewatch it with you. And it's on Netflix. It's called Baby Reindeer. As the number one show, but it's based on a true story of like a guy that gets stalked, and it's based on a true story, but it's a bit of a light-hearted, kind of got a bit of like comedy side to it, but it is based on a true story, and all of the emails and texts and things that he receives from this stalker are all real. But I think you'd like it because it's a bit weird and it's funny, but it's serious and it's obviously got the true crime undertone. But it's real. Like, I've only watched one or two episodes so far, and it seems really good. So I think we should definitely put that on the recommendation list. But I think you'd like it.
Mm. Yeah. All right, cool. I'll have to check it
Baby
out.
Baby Reindeer, it's called.
Baby Reindeer.
But I think that's it for me today.
Hey, wait, I've got one more thing quickly before we get into the case. Have you listened to Taylor's new
album? Oh, I love
it,
Karina. And, like, I'm not just saying that. It's, like, definitely one of her best.
I am loving it as well. Look, I'm not kidding you. Since it came out, I've just had it.
I know, and that song that goes, I'm so depressed, I act like it's my birthday. I love that song. Love that.
I love that. I'm loving the bolter at the moment. You know, set it with a
kiss. Yeah, love that one. I love that one. My Boy Only Breaks His Favorite Toys, whatever it's called. I love that one. Yeah, it's just so good. Like, it's so good.
And what the fudge, right? She drops one and then drops another 15 songs. It was too much for my brain on Friday. I was like, oh my gosh. Like,
I know,
wow.
Good on her, hey?
So freaking good. But all right, cool, because I wanted to say, obviously we haven't spoken about it, but I was like, oh,
I absolutely love
excited.
It
so freaking
but
good.
wait, we should actually just quickly touch on so do you think, I think this is a theory, but do you think that she was married to Joe?
I've not even seen that theory. So, because I've heard the ring thing, like, as in, I've heard that, like, she wanted to marry him.
So many references throughout, like, my husband is cheating, my husband this, my husband that. Like, throughout the whole, all these different songs refer to a husband and cheating. So I think everyone's thinking maybe they were married, actually, and then he's obviously cheated on her. So it's like a post-divorce album.
Really, because I know that on one of the songs she's talking about them like on the swings with like imaginary rings or something. That's why I just, or like they're meant to have rings. Like, you know what though? Because wasn't she dating that other random
guy in between?
And I think a lot of the songs, are about that. Like the Fortnite, which I actually love the Fortnite song as well. But isn't Fortnite about that guy she was seeing? I can't even remember
Matt Healy.
His name
now. Yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think there's a few songs about him. The theory is that they're married.
And do you know, I have been on TikTok looking at, like, it's so bad, Lockie. I cannot get off it because I keep getting people, like, coming up with, like, what different songs mean. Oh, my God, and the Kim one.
Yes.
How funny is that? Oh, so funny. But no, and it's so funny. I have not seen that married one. Now I'm going to have to freaking go into TikTok after we record. So, I want to.
Yeah.
All right. So should we get into this week's case?
Yes. Yes. Let's do it.
Help me, please. I need help.
Calm down. What's going on?
I'm broken and I heard shots. I don't know what's happening. I'm tied upstairs. Dad?
Hello?
I'm okay. I'm alive.
A woman is dead and her husband injured after a home invasion in Markham.
There was a knock at the door, then three gunmen burst inside.
They dragged me down the stairs, and then I heard two pops.
We don't get a lot of homicides in Markham, so it's like a grenade going off.
Investigators are not ruling out any scenario, including the possibility the men broke into the wrong home.
We're only going to have one witness, and that is the daughter, Jennifer Pan.
Why would you leave a surviving witness? It doesn't make sense. Something's not right about this. Now, I want to know everything about her. Pan family were fairly normal, but outward appearances are one thing. What actually happens inside the house are completely different.
There was just so much expectation. So I lied.
This is the moment where everything changes.
This quickly developed into something that nobody ever saw coming.
There's nothing normal about murder, but this one is particularly unnerving.
What other lies hasn't she told us yet?
Okay, so today we are talking about the case of Bic Pan, Han Pan, and Jennifer Pan. It's a bit of a mouthful, but I actually came across this, like, it popped on Netflix last week and I watched it on the plane, and I always knew about this story, but it's like, so, I don't know. It's just a bit of a weird one. But the whole story kind of starts, I think the best way to tell it starts with a 911 call that was placed on November the 8th in 2010. And the person making this 911 call is 24-year-old Jennifer Pan. Jennifer lived with her parents, Bic and Han, and her brother Felix in Markham, Ontario, and this is in Canada. And Markham, Ontario was like a very family-orientated area, you know, middle class. It had a very low crime rate, like nothing really ever happened there. So the Pan family immigrated to Canada from Vietnam. Han and Bic worked at a car parts company together. Like, they had different jobs, but they worked in the same place, and they were hardworking people. They lived very modestly. You know, they drove nice cars. They had a nice house. They were just like a pretty normal family. Han and Bic wanted a better life for their children, and they had really high ambition for their lives. I think this is like in Asian culture, like they call it tiger parenting. Like, a lot of, you know, Asian parents are like this. They really push their children to succeed. It's like, all or nothing, you know? I will just play this 911 call now just to get a bit of context to the episode.
Where are you, ma'am?
So in this 911 call, Jennifer tells the dispatcher that intruders broke into her home and demanded money. These intruders tied her up, shot both of her parents, and fled the scene, taking around $2,000 cash with them. Bic, Jennifer's mom, died at the scene, And Han, Jennifer's father, survived but was very badly injured, and you can hear him screaming in the back of the 911 call. He was actually shot in the eye, and the bullet went in his eye and traveled down his skull into his neck. Isn't that wild? How crazy is that? Because of his injuries, when he was taken to hospital, he was immediately put into a coma, which obviously makes sense. After Jennifer gets checked over by medical staff, she is taken into the station to make her first statement as to what happened that night. And she tells the police kind of everything that happened and how the night went. She tells the investigators that she had dinner with her parents, and after dinner, her mum headed to line dancing, which she did every Monday night. And Jennifer, after dinner, went to her bedroom. I couldn't find too much information on the brother, Felix, but I get the feeling like he didn't live with them at this time. Like, it must have been maybe an older brother, I'm not sure, but I don't think he lived with them.
No, he was – I was going to say he was 3 years younger, and he was away at college studying engineering.
Oh, really? Oh, that was lucky that he was home. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So her mum got home at around 9:30 p.m., and shortly after she arrived home, the intruders broke into the house. They tied Jennifer to the banister, her hands behind her back and tied her to the banister. So they left her upstairs, and then they led both of her parents to the basement, where she said that she heard the intruders say, "You lied to us, you lied to us, you just had to cooperate." And then she describes hearing two pops, which insinuate gunshots. Jennifer gives a description of the men. There was three men, and she describes them all as African American. And she does provide some insight into some of their appearances. Like, she said one had dreadlocks. She said one had a Jamaican accent. Like, she's able to give kind of a bit of a description on the people. Police began trying to investigate a motive as to why these men would break into the house and kill two people for $2,000. They were looking into whether Han had gambling debts. They were looking into their financial position. Like, were they actually, did they have like a large amount of money stashed away or something? But police began to
Because it's so it random. Is. Like, as in their house didn't stand out against anybody else's. And one other thing I did see is that police were also investigating whether maybe Jennifer's mother was followed home from line dancing, because apparently they had those fancy cars. Like, that was the only thing they really had that was a little bit flash. So that was, like, another thing they were looking into, but they had no idea. They're like, what the heck has happened here? And why leave a witness?
Yeah, why leave a witness? And it sent the neighborhood, like, into a bit of a frenzy. Like, they were like, is this a random attack? Like, is it going to happen again type of thing? Police were starting to kind of wonder, like, the intruders broke in, killed two people, and all they took was $2,000. And when they looked around the house, there was still, like, a lot of valuables in the house that weren't taken. There was jewelry, an expensive camera, and, like, their wallets were full of cash, and that was left behind. So it started to look like the motive maybe wasn't just to rob them, because they didn't really take that much stuff. Police review CCTV footage from the area. I think they are able to get some footage from a house across the street. And this shows three men entering the home through the front door. And it was clear from the video that there was no forced entry. Like, they literally just walked through the front door. So throughout the investigation, they find a guy kind of related to the Pan family. His name is Danny Wong. And Danny Wong was a drug dealer, and he actually had been previously in a relationship with Jennifer. So he did have ties to the family. He was involved in crime, and they thought that maybe he would have something to do with it. They think that maybe it was drug related, like maybe Danny had gotten mixed up with someone and he had suggested that they might have some money, or I don't know what they were thinking, but they thought that he was the missing link. He's brought in for questioning, and he tells the police that he has been in trouble for the past for drug possession and drug trafficking, but since he got in trouble, he has stopped completely, and he's turned his life around.
He also says that Jennifer was his ex-girlfriend and that their relationship ended because Jennifer's parents didn't want them to be together. That Jennifer wanted to be with Danny regardless, but he said to her, you know, there's nothing we can really do. Like, they don't want us together. There's no point. We should just move on.
And he did move on. I'm pretty sure he got a new girlfriend. And everything.
Yeah, so he tells the police in his interview he's actually seeing somebody else and that him and Jen have remained friends post their breakup because they were kind of confiding in each other because they were both receiving, like, harassing texts and calls. And because they had that in common, they were obviously, like, leaning on each other.
Can I tell you something, Lockie? How many cases have we done this year that involve weird calls or texts and it ends up being someone involved? You know what I mean? Like, it's not, it's never a random. It's never a freaking random. It's always someone close to the case trying to throw
I mean, like, you think, would, like, who would ever pick a random phone number and just go for it?
So strange.
So Danny says in this interview that they both, like him and Jen, were receiving these text messages up to 2 days before the murder and that the last message he received said bang, bang, bang. Police are more confused after interviewing Danny because they feel like they just have more questions than answers. And they're also thinking, like, why did Jennifer not mention these phone calls and text messages in her first interview? Like, because clearly that would be, like, you would think that she would think, oh, that's of importance to the police, but she doesn't mention it at all.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, exactly. I feel like a major red flag.
So because of this, they bring Jennifer in for her second interview and they ask her if she was receiving any harassment or threatening behavior prior to the murder. And she says that she was, that Danny's girlfriend at the time was messaging her, telling her to back off from Danny, to leave Danny alone, calling her stupid, all this stuff. So she's not even mentioning the same thing that Danny mentioned, right?
Yeah.
She also says that her parents eventually found out that she was secretly still dating Danny and that her father gave her an ultimatum to choose Danny or to choose her family. And she said she chose her family, but she did remain friends with Danny anyway. After this, her parents found text messages in her phone that she was still talking to Danny, so they confiscated her cell phone and her parents drove her everywhere so that they could make sure she was not keeping in contact with him.
Hey, Lockie, sorry, can I just tell you something? I found so sickening. So, you know, I was listening to the episode Red Handed did on Jennifer's face, right? And, oh, my goodness, they were talking about how these two used to do baby talk together and all their text messages. I know. You know how we feel about freaking baby talk? We're, like, sickening. And apparently they used to go, like, one of them was called, like, Monkey. Oh. I was thinking of you, but wait a second. It's MUNKIE. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the way they're spelling it, gross. And the other one was like Mr. Bubbles or something. I was. Yeah, I had to tell you. It's so gross.
I also find it weird, like, you know, she's an adult by this point and they treat her like a child. Like, I don't know if.
Yes, but not only that, she could have freaking just left. Why didn't she just leave the house?
So I think that is obviously a question, but it's like, do they want control of her until she's post college? Like, is that, I don't know. It's very odd.
Totally.
So in this second interview, Jennifer is kind of insinuating to the police that she thinks that Danny's girlfriend was involved because of the harassment she was receiving from her. So Jennifer admits in her second interview that she does still have feelings for him. So I think because Jennifer's parents were so strict, she talks about how her parents wanted her to be something in the medical field and they wanted her to be a pharmacist, right? So, like, and then there's a school friend of Jennifer's that talks about how her parents send her to, like, a pretty well-to-do high school and Jennifer like was not a very bright person. So she didn't actually get into pharmacology at all. But
well, lucky she failed high school. I don't know if you know that she failed one subject and she failed the whole of high school. She didn't even finish.
Yeah, and she was like forging her report cards to during high school. Yeah. She would like forge her report cards so her parents knew she was doing well. So like I mentioned, they wanted her to be a pharmacist, but because she obviously didn't finish high school and she wasn't that bright, she didn't get into university to do pharmacology. But in her second interview with the police, Jennifer tells the police that she lied to them at this point and she said that she did get in and she told them that she was going to university. So because her parents were controlling her to make sure she didn't contact Danny, they were driving her to university, dropping her off. Jennifer was pretending she was going and then like they'd obviously pick her up. So they dropped her off thinking she was going to uni, but she actually wasn't. She was lying. This went on for 4 years. So in order to maintain this whole charade, Jennifer had told her parents that she'd won scholarships. She had like high school, she forged all these documents like to do with the scholarship. She also went to the extent of purchasing secondhand textbooks and she would like watch videos on YouTube to create like fake notebooks. Like, so it looked like she was like taking notes at uni. And like,
I have so much to talk about this. I
like, it's wild. Like she's, it was like, it was like a full-time job to pretend that she was going to uni.
But can I tell you, why didn't she just retake that subject that she failed at school and then go to study? You know, like she's already studying pretty much for like pharmaceutical, whatever it is, to be a pharmacist. She's already studying this. She's spending hours and hours in the library writing fake notes. Why not just freaking go and do
that's
it?
That's right.
I just don't know. Look, what a waste of four freaking years. And sorry, can I say some stuff, right? You know that she had told her parents that her graduation class was too big, right, for them to attend, like for both of them to attend. She only had a spot for one person, but because she couldn't pick between the two of them, she took a friend instead. So that's how, you know, she sort of covered not graduating. That's what she said to them, right? And she also, which I thought was crazy, told her parents that it would be easier if she stayed like at a friend's house who lived closer to the campus, but really she was living Danny. With Danny and his family. Yes. And one of the craziest things I thought, which pretty much made her all her lies become undone, is she told them that she was volunteering at a children's blood testing lab. Yeah. Have you seen this? And her parents became sus because she didn't have a uniform or a key pass or anything like that. So they insisted on taking her to work and they followed her into the hospital, Lockie. And she knew that they were following her. So she went and hid, God knows where, somewhere in the hospital for hours. She hid in the hospital for hours.
What did you think was going to happen?
And, well, she did that, right? And they obviously were like, they couldn't track her down in this hospital to this lab. So that was the main thing that got them to call and ask the friend that she said that she was staying with. They called and asked her, like, what's going on with Jennifer? And she's like, she doesn't stay here. And when she came home, she had to come clean about failing, you know, college and that she wasn't studying. But she didn't tell them about the high school. I think she just told them about college.
Because at this point as well, like you said, she told them that they couldn't go to the graduation, but she'd forged a fake degree document, like that say she graduated.
Yeah.
And like they were obviously wondering why she hadn't found a job post-grad and like they couldn't understand, like she's got the degree, like why can't you find something type of thing?
So
police are kind of now thinking like if Jennifer could keep this big of a lie going 4 years, like what else is she lying about? So they make Jennifer retell the story of the night in question. They ask her to show them how, so she says she's tied up, right? But she managed to call 911. So they want her to reenact. How did she get the phone out of her pocket and call 911 all with her hands tied behind her back? And
She does a pretty good job.
She does.
Doing this, though. In
she
the
does.
Footage. Yeah.
But it's also like, there's no way. Like, she almost like spins her hands around. Yeah. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it looks kind of legit, but it also doesn't.
Can we just talk about her interview, though, for a second? Because it's so funny knowing now that she's a little liar. When you're watching the interview, I feel like she does a pretty good job playing the victim. Mm-hmm. I really do. At the first interview especially, she does a pretty good job, Lockie.
Yeah, all her answers are quite good. Like, even when she can't come up with something, like, it you could definitely think that she's legit.
Yeah.
So the big question now really was, you know, why shoot her parents and leave Jennifer? So if – because she's still saying that intruders came in and everyone's wondering – why leave a witness? Why would they shoot her? Why would they not even injure her? Like, what's the go here? So,
and not only that, but sorry, can I just say one more thing? Sorry. You know what's freaking nuts is that her dad, this is another thing I think the investigators found, like a major red flag, is that her dad ran out of the house, not up to her to, you know what I mean, like to help his daughter. He did the opposite. He ran like away from her.
Yeah, because she talks about that in the first interview. Like, he was running away and she was saying, like, no, like,
I'm okay, I'm on the phone to her, whatever. It's not 911. It's whatever the Canadian, or is Canadian or 911? Yeah, I don't even know.
I think so.
But anyway, the emergency service. Yeah, she's like, I'm on the phone to the police. And he's running away. Like, you'd think, like, let's be honest, usually the parent would be looking for their child to make sure their child's okay. So, yeah, I thought that was huge.
Yeah, so the person now that holds the key to everything is Han, and he's still in a coma at this point. But when doctors are able, they take him out of a coma and they obviously let the police know. The police go down to the hospital to interview him to see what his recollection of the night was. Mr. Pan said that he went to bed early that night. He is then awoken by a man with a gun who tells him to get up and come downstairs. He sees his wife hysterically saying, we don't have any money, we don't have any money. They obviously sit the mum and the dad on the couch. Mr. Pan said he's being pistol whipped. And while he's being pistol whipped, he notices his daughter walking around the house having friendly conversation with the men. And she didn't have any bindings on her hands.
Oh my gosh. It's
very clear to the police now. Jennifer is involved. I think they had their suspicions, but then Mr. Pan saying these things, it's like so clear that she was involved. So she's brought in for questioning a third time. This is 14 days after the murder of her mother and the attempted murder of her father. In this interview, Jennifer talks about how she had depression, how she would cut herself quite regularly because she felt so much pressure from her parents to succeed. They also say to her that her father gave a description of the men and that his description doesn't match her description. In other words, she said they were African-American and he said they weren't. But I think this was a police tactic to try and get her to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of pressing her, like, why did you lie to us? Why did you lie to us? And she completely breaks down and she says to the police that it wasn't meant to go like this. The whole plan was for the men to come in and kill her. And they call it, they call it a suicide by hitman. So she said she hired these guys for $2,000 to take her out, and she says the guy that she organized this with was called Homeboy, which I thought was funny, but this is actually his nickname. So what happened was Danny is involved. Him and Jennifer came up with this plan to hire a professional hitman for $10,000 to kill her parents. So she's saying it was for her, but it's clear that that's not what happened. So they hired this hitman to kill her parents. She knew she would inherit about $500,000 post the murder, so she could obviously pay them the money. Following the murders, she was going to live with Danny. Like, so this whole thing was so they could be together.
But in saying that, you know, I think it was the night before or a few nights before the murder, he actually messaged her and said, told her, like, I feel this way about my girlfriend. The way you feel about me is how I feel about my new girlfriend, and that he doesn't want to be with her. And she's like, call it off then. And he's like, but don't you want to do this for you? So there was a stage that this wasn't going to go ahead because he didn't want to be with her, but she obviously thought, I'll be able to win him back with all this money. That's what I honestly think she thought. That was in her mind, you know.
Yeah, so Danny connected her with a man by the name of Lenford Crawford. He was a Jamaican-born Canadian, and he was actually called Homeboy. So Danny also gave Jennifer a SIM card and a phone so that she could contact this Lenford without using her actual cell phone. Like, he really crafted this whole thing. He pointed her in the direction. He made sure she wasn't going to get caught, supposedly. This guy, Lenford, then contacted another man who his name was Eric Sean Cardi, and he went by Sniper. And then Sniper, in turn, contacted another guy called David. And these were the three men that did the hit.
And, sorry, can I just say, you know, she unlocked the door, obviously, for them, which we sort of assumed, but she also flashed the lights in like one of the front rooms, like to like sort of signal to them to come in, and that was caught on that footage you were saying earlier from that street across the house. You can actually see the lights flashing.
That's right.
And one other thing as well, prior to this, did you know that she had tried to arrange a
before
hit on her father? Yep, through a high school friend, and she gave them apparently like $1,500, but then they ghosted her. And she obviously couldn't get the money back. What, you're going to go to the police and say, this guy stole my money because I was trying to put a hit on my dad?
And it's just so crazy to me, like, just leave. Just leave them.
I know. I know, right?
So the trial of Jennifer and the accomplices began on March the 19th, 2014, and it went for 10 months. All of these people pleaded not guilty to the charges of first-degree murder, attempted murder, and conspiracy to commit murder, but the evidence in the trial included exhaustive tracking of the mobile, like their mobile phone movements and text messages. Like, they, you know, they showed over 100 messages sent between Jennifer and Danny, like organizing everything. The text messages right before the killing, because obviously she'd text them to say that they could come in, all this stuff. It was all presented in court, but they were still claiming they were not guilty. So Jennifer, Danny, David, and Lenford were all sentenced to life sentences with no chance of parole for 25 years. The sniper guy, he was originally tried with the rest of them. However, during the trial, his lawyer felt ill and his case was declared a mistrial. And then for the next trial, he just pleaded guilty. And because he pleaded guilty, he had a lesser sentence of 18 years with the eligibility of parole after 9. Jennifer's father and brother were granted a restraining order from the state banning Jennifer from ever contacting members of her surviving family, and Jennifer is also banned from ever contacting Danny Wong. So in May 2023, Jennifer, Danny, Lenford, and David were granted an appeal on the basis that the original judge incorrectly instructed the jury to only consider two scenarios that would justify the first degree murder charge. So, like, I don't really understand what that means, but it's like something obviously happened that shouldn't have, and because of that, they used it to their advantage and they went for an appeal and it was actually granted to them.
Yeah, it sounds like a technicality.
Yes, but it's only for the murder charge, not the attempted murder charge. So they still have to go by that. Now, even though this appeal was granted, it's reported that the Attorney General has also, like, appealed the appeal, and the decision is currently being reviewed at the moment. But to this day, Jennifer still maintains her innocence.
And her dad and her brother's victim statements are
horrendous.
Heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. Like, her dad is, I can't even Like, it's so sad. And talks about, like, that he can't sell the house because obviously, like you were saying, it's, like, in a family-orientated sort of area. Nobody, everyone knows what happened in that house. It's sort of, like, bad juju. Like, you know what I mean? To purchase his house, and he the house just sits there empty. And I think he lives with – it's either his mother or his siblings, and he hopes to just one day live with his son because he's just – yeah. He's got really bad anxiety. He hasn't been able to return back to work because of his injuries. It's just like – horrendous. Yeah.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. So that is the case of the murder of Vic Pan, the attempted murder of Ham Pan, and – Jennifer Pan. I don't know if she's even deserving of being put in the title of it, but unfortunately it's how the case is known.
Yeah, exactly. But yes, that's our case.
If you have a case you want us to cover, you can send us a message on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is at Caffeine Crime and Canines, or you can head to our website and leave a request in the request box. If you want to support the podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review, head to our website to purchase some merchandise, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/caffeinecrimeandcanines.
And until next week.
Bye.
Bye.